Probably what it is, he said. Probably the carpet's got a gears on it to do the opposite of anything that's said. Can you make it go up further? Yes, but I'm not going to, said Rincewind. The carpet drifted slowly forward, and as happens so often at times like this, a rolling slab of masonry bounced right across the spot where it had lain. A moment later they were out in the open air, the storm of stone behind them. The palace was pulling itself to pieces, and the pieces were funneling up into the air like a volcanic eruption in reverse. The sorcerous tower had completely disappeared, but the stones were dancing towards the spot where it had stood, and... They're building another tower, said Nigel.
Out of my palace, too, said Creosote.
The hat's won, said Rincewind. That's why it's building its own tower. It's a sort of reaction. Wizards always used to build a tower around themselves, like those, what do you call those things you find at the bottom of rivers? Frogs? Stones? Unsuccessful gangsters? Caddis flies is what I meant, said Rincewind. When a wizard set out to fight, the first thing he always did was build a tower. It's very big, said Nigel. Rincewind nodded glumly.
Where are we going? Said Canina.
Rincewind shrugged. Away, he said. The outer palace wall drifted just below them. As they passed over it began to shake, and small bricks began to loop towards the storm of flying rock that buzzed around the new tower. Eventually Canina said,
All right, how did you get the carpet to fly? Does it really do the opposite of what you command?
No, I just paid attention to certain fundamental details of laminar and spatial arrangements.
You've lost me there, she admitted.
You wanted in non-wizard talk?
Yes.
You put it on the floor upside down, said Rincewind.
Canina sat very still for a while. Then she said,
I must say this is very comfortable. It's the first time I've ever flown on a carpet.
It's the first time I've ever flown one, said Rincewind vaguely.
You do it very well, she said.
Thank you.
You said you were frightened of heights.
Terrified.
You don't show it.
I'm not thinking about it.
Rincewind turned and looked at the tower behind them. It had grown quite a lot in the last minute, blossoming at the top into a complexity of turrets and battlements. A swarm of tiles was hovering over it, individual tiles swooping down and clinking into place like ceramic bees on a bombing run. It was impossibly high. The stones at the bottom would have been crushed if it wasn't for the magic that crackled through them. Well, that was just about it as far as organized wizardry was concerned. 2,000 years of peaceful magic had gone down the drain, the towers were going up again, and with all this raw magic floating around, something was going to get very seriously hurt. Probably the universe. Too much magic could wrap time and space around itself, and that wasn't good news for the kind of person who had grown used to things like effects following things like causes. And of course it would be impossible to explain things to his companions. They didn't seem to grasp ideas properly. More particularly, they didn't seem to be able to get the hang of doom. They suffered from the terrible delusion that something could be done. They seemed prepared to make the world the way they wanted it, or die in the attempt. And the trouble with dying in the attempt was that you died in the attempt. The whole point about the old university organization was that it kept a sort of peace between wizards who got along with one another about as easily as cats in a sack. And now the gloves were off, anyone who tried to interfere was going to end up severely scratched. This wasn't the old, gentle, rather silly magic that the disc was used to. This was magic war, white-hot and searing. Rincewind wasn't very good at precognition. In fact, he could barely see into the present. But he knew with weary certainty that at some point in the very near future, like 30 seconds or so, someone would say, "Surely there's something we could do." The desert passed below them, lit by the low rays of the setting sun.
"There don't seem to be many stars," said Nigel.
"Perhaps they're scared to come out."
Rincewind looked up. There was a silver haze high in the air.
"It's raw magic settling out of the atmosphere," he said. "It's saturated." 27, 28, 29,
surely there's something we..."
Canina began. "There isn't," said Rincewind flatly, but with just the faintest twinge of satisfaction. "The wizards will fight each other until there's one victor. There isn't anything else anyone can do."
"I could do with a drink," said Creosote. "I suppose we couldn't stop somewhere where I could buy an inn."
"What with?" said Nigel. "You're poor, remember?"
"Poor, I don't mind," said the Serif. "It's sobriety that is giving me difficulties."
Conina prodded Rincewind gently in the ribs.
"Are you steering this thing?" she said.
"No."
"Then where is it going?" Nigel peered downwards. "By the look of it," he said, "it's going hubwards, towards the Circle Sea."
"Someone must be guiding it."
"Hello," said a friendly voice in Rincewind's head. "You're not my conscience again, are you?" thought Rincewind. "I'm feeling really bad." "Well, I'm sorry," Rincewind thought, "but none of this is my fault. I'm just a victim of circuses. I don't see why I should take the blame."
"Yes, but you could do something about it."
"Like what?"
"You could destroy the sorcerer. All this would collapse then."
"I wouldn't stand a chance."
"Then at least you could die in the attempt. That might be preferable to letting magical war break out."
"Oh, look, just shut up, will you?" said Rincewind.
"What?" said Kanina.
Said Rincewind vaguely. He looked down blankly at the blue and gold pattern underneath him and added, "You're flying this, aren't you? Through me. That's sneaky."
"What are you talking about?"
"Oh, sorry. Talking to myself."
End of CD 5.